Welcome to the Bitcoin.com News Podcast. Today's guest is Li Rongbin, founding partner at 7X Ventures, more commonly known as Eraser in the crypto community. Mr. Li, would you please start by introducing yourself to our audience?
Cool. Nice to meet you, Aviv, and nice to meet you, all the audience. So I'm Li Rongbin. You can call me Eraser. That's my nickname. So very happy to actually be in this podcast.
Yeah, we're happy to have you.
Cool. So should I just introduce myself first? Yeah, yes, like please. Some of my backgrounds and things. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So actually, I entered the crypto industry from, let's say, 6 years ago, at the beginning of 2016. So before that, I actually worked in Africa for almost 6 years. So basically doing, the one-by-one role strategy for the Chinese government. So a lot of investments, businesses, and especially construction business in almost all the African region. So been to a lot of different countries like Nigeria, Angola, South Sudan, Djibouti, Ethiopia, some of the, not so developed countries. So that's the first time when I was there, I faced with, major currency collapse. One was actually in Nigeria, one was in Angola. So actually the fiat currency just dropped about 40% in just one month. So actually we lost a lot of money in there. So before that, I'm actually a believer in centralized, government, and believer in fiat currency. But only after that, I'm thinking, okay, so maybe this is a little bit wrong. So what if there's some other kind of, let's say, technology or some other, different method could control this, the fiat currency, collapse or the deflation or the inflation of fiat currency. So because my background is actually from more technology-based. I study computer science in my undergrad and have a master's in University of Waterloo, so more majored in engineering plus finance way. So yeah, it's kind of like a perfect background for blockchain, sitting on the both sides of blockchain. So that's the first time when I heard of Bitcoin, and I said, wow, is it another scam? Maybe I want to, check it more, a little bit more. So I read about the white paper of Bitcoin, and I read the white paper of Ethereum, and suddenly I think that, okay, this is the thing I'm trying to find to solve the problem of fiat currency. So I just quit my last job and enter this area. And I was lucky enough to actually have some friends in the industry. So from the day one I entered this this industry, I actually become an advisor of a early VC of like a crypto VC in China. And that VC actually invested in some of the earliest projects from, the Chinese community, the Chinese cryptocurrency community, like exchanges like Huobi.com, blockchain projects like NEO and also like Tron. So like very early stage. So yeah, that's how and why I entered this industry.
Very interesting. Yeah. I can see how working in Africa will get you to realize the necessity of a stable cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
No, that's very interesting. So when you started the 7X, what made it different than any other VC?
Yeah, so a little bit history about 7X also. So to be honest, that we are quite a young brand. So the 7X brand, if like, I know maybe some of the audience never heard of it before, because we are new actually to the market. So right now we are only like one and a half year old for this brand. But all of our three founding partners, we actually have like almost 5 to 6 years of experiences in the field. So like I mentioned, like before, Zemnex, I was the partner of like a funding partner of another crypto VC that was based in Beijing. And my other founding partner, Liu Qi, who is actually the founder of Blockchainers. So that's a very famous, you know, crypto VC based in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of last year, we decided to merge into one because we think that right now, this coming wave, at the beginning of last year, we think that the coming wave of entrepreneurship, that'll be quite different from, you know, all the things, all the waves we experienced in the past, especially when you are like experiencing enough in this industry, you must experience the ICO wave, the IEO wave, everything. So mm-hmm. basically back then as a VC, you don't need to do anything. You just, you know, sit there, you know, catch the hype, you know, throw your money out and collect your money in. So that's everything a VC is doing. So it's, you know, the early stage of the industry. But right now, it's kind of like more competition in the space, and you need to actually devote more added value to the project. So, or else you won't get enough allocation, or you won't invest into top tier projects. So basically, I think what differentiates us from other, especially the Asian-based or the Chinese-based crypto VC, is that we focus on how to give extra value to our portfolios. So basically, like I mentioned, the three of us are actually coming from very different background. Like I mentioned, I'm from like tech and finance. My other founding partner, who is very good at FA service, so he used to have like one subsidiary of Blockchainers that is one of the biggest FA service firm, especially for crypto companies that was based in Asia. And they did a lot for incubating and FA services. Like right now, the projects called Terra, the Korean one, and also project called Mix Marvel, they all incubated and by him. And my last founding partner, Feng Shi, he's very good at marketing. So he used to be in charge of the biggest tech media in China, in charge of the marketing and sales. So the tech media is called 36KR. It's a listed company. So it's more it's kind of like a tech crunch in China. Mm-hmm. So basically, he's very good at how to do marketing, the strategy, the branding. So things related to this, right? So basically, the three of us were actually help projects from different ways. Like almost all a project could face or entrepreneur could face in the way of their entrepreneurship, right? So like fundraising, like strategy, like marketing, like and also like I help them to build their like tokenomics. Like me personally, I helped with the Dodo DEX, the Dodo V2 version of tokenomics. We have a very innovative like dual token model, and helped like Mi Sung, some other like AR Drive, the RV related ecosystem projects. We help to design a lot on the tokenomics. So yeah, so right now I would say that almost more than half of our time doing the value added services rather than just investing. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think that's a differentiator. And another thing is that I think that we have great taste, especially in the early stage projects. We can understand what an entrepreneur thinks, and we can sense who or what kind of thing is going to be a game changer. So some cases, including like very early investments into like YGG and some other like the RV ecosystem. We actually did invest into the RV ecosystem about a year ago. So most recently, we see the booming of the RV ecosystem, right? So basically, we think that we have the logic of how to find how to accelerate a very early stage, entrepreneur, and how to help them. So basically, that's where our specialized thing. And to be honest, that we are not a very big brand name or very big fund, and not like the AUM is not so high. And we want to stay focused on early stage projects to find those like non-consensus projects at a very, very early, you know, beginning of the project's life. So yeah, so I think that's what we are different.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I just want to give some context. It was published in October that you guys raised $30 million for the second phase of the fund. So yeah, you know, that's, you know, if anyone needs some perspective. So can you tell us some of the most interesting investment you made recently?
Recently I would say I'll give you like two examples. One is not so recently, it happens actually last year. It's YGG, Yu-Gi-Oh! Games. So we actually invest into YGG at a very, very early stage at the first round, that the valuation is only like $10 million. So everybody knows that right now they're kind of like a $6 billion market cap project, right? So yeah, we made a huge gain on it. But the thing is that I don't want to say about the gains or the profit we made. We want to actually, you know, talk about the logic behind it, why we invest into them so early. So basically, the first time I see YGG, everybody says that okay, it's just a game guild. Right, it's just a guild, and another thing to add is that we not only invest in the first round, and we add our bets at the second round and third round, at the valuation of 40 mil and 90 mil. So basically, a lot of people think that okay, it's just another game guild. It happens all the time in the Web 2.0 world, right? So the web games and everything. And a lot of people think that if the valuation is too high for 40 mil or 90 mil game guild, that the statics is just not so huge back then. So all the scholars they had, all the members they have in their guild is not like okay, a traditional game guild in the Web 2.0 world, right? But basically our logic is kind of like this. So we did think that YGG is not just a guild from the beginning. We think that it's more kind of like a organization that can have the most powerful, you know, future, especially in a kind of a metaverse ideology or in a metaverse related future. So basically everybody knows that in the metaverse or in the games, there's no government, there's no kind of law, or there's no kind of, you know, policies actually to constrain people, right?
No, so regulations basically who, yet, yeah.
Yeah, no regulations. And actually who holds the belief of people, or actually who are the best organizers of people going to be the controller of the metaverse. Mm-hmm. So I think basically YGG is this thing. And I don't know if the audience here or Avi yourself have seen a film called The Irish. And I think it's a Martin Scorsese's director of the film.
Irishman.
So yeah, The Irishman. Yeah, The Irishman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, they describe the mobs or the mafia in America, how they evolve, right? So I don't want to compare YGG to a mafia, but if you follow their track, you will see a lot of things in common. For example, how YGG set up their sub-DAOs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, okay, they're setting up like new branches all across, like a mafia setting up all the branches all across the country, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've seen that movie, you'll see that, okay, at the beginning, the mobs or the mafia actually controls the truck, the transportation.
Trucking business.
The business, right? And they have a kind of an association, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a guild, right?
Truck the union, drivers. The unions. Guild. They work with the unions.
Exactly. Yeah, the union. Yeah. The union. It's kind of like the truck driver's guild. So basically, what they do is actually they buy trucks, they buy the assets, and they hire people, or they actually invite people to earn money because they cannot afford to buy the assets, right? So the business model is kind of like the same in Axie Infinity. So I would say that, okay, I see the potential of YGG becoming a huge organization in the future of Metaverse. And they will definitely control almost, not control, but you know, accelerate almost all the parts of metaverses, not only gaming. So basically right now, if you follow them, they are doing like buying assets in different games. They're doing like DeFi projects. They're maybe, you know, developing their own infrastructure, actually their technology, their infrastructure, their own kind of information system to do it better. So basically, I think it's more kind of like more complicated and more the future is going to be very huge for just the you know, ordinary deal, right? So that's a example. Another very recent example is a project in the RV vehicle system called Accord. So basically, we believe in the RV vehicle system because we think that the permanent storage is a kind of backbone for Web 3.0 applications. So basically, the Web 3.0 is always all about like the user is himself own his own data, right? And he can take full control of the data. So how can you take full control of data if the data is not stored at your own will permanently? For example, if you store it like in some centralized, like cloud service, or you store it onto some, for example, not permanent decentralized storage, you need to pay rent, for example, the Filecoin, right? So basically, if you stop to pay the money, your data will be lost. So it's not you're taking full control of your data. So I would say that, okay, the only way of going into Web 3.0 is about all about how you secure your data ownership. And at the beginning of secure your data ownership is about permanent storage. So that's why we are so bullish on the whole ecosystem of RVEV. And we see a lot of like different innovations on RVEV, like off-chain computing using RVEV as their their state, like their record of the transaction state, and a lot of other like social related projects using RVEV as their record for the data. So basically, Accord is a project that's using, it developed a kind of a protocol called the social protocol. So basically, they think that all the social networks and the data you create from all your social networks will be stored onto a permanent storage, and you can take full control of your data. So it's not like right now in the 2.0, world, right? So basically, I believe in this. So that's why it's still a very early project. We did co-lead the project, so investment. Yeah.
Yeah, both are very interesting. And, data security is definitely a hot topic right now. Yeah. But I want to ask you about the metaverse, because that's what's, that's everybody's talking about it right now. So where do you see the metaverse and the NFT market, how does it where is it going from this point forward?
I think the metaverse and NFT are actually two different two different topic. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are actually combining those together because, in the metaverse, is all you own is actually an NFT, right? Yeah. So I want to separate it. So basically, my attitude toward NFT is that it's going to be so huge that maybe I would say in 5 years time, everybody in the world, maybe they at least own one NFT. So, I mean, the internet users, or I would say the Web 3.0 users, right? So basically, NFT is not only about art or collectibles or art blogs or CryptoPunks. It's not like that, right? So NFT is kind of like a representative for almost all the things you need in the virtual world. For example, your data can be an NFT. Your identity can be an NFT, right? And like, for example, your game entry can be an NFT, right? And almost all the things you can imagine in a virtual world, it can be represented by NFT if the thing you owned is different from the other one owned, right? So if it's like different items, it's gonna be an NFT. And it, like also in finance, like Uniswap V3, right? So the LP, the liquidity provider is actually an NFT, right? To prove that you already give the liquidity. So basically, NFT can be everything. And I think there will be a trend of the price of NFT gonna be declining. So it's because in the future, it's not only about, like I said, it's not only about collectibles. So basically we'll see a lot of, for example, not 10K NFTs, not 10K PFPs, but like a million NFT printed actually to, for example, to represent one of your membership card, right? So basically things like this. And also the average price of the NFT will drop, but it will become more kind of like mass adoption in the future.
More ubiquitous. I can go into a gym with my NFT, right?
Yeah, sure.
I got it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the metaverse, I would say that is more kind of like early stage. So the definition right now is not so clear. So everybody say that they're doing metaverse related projects, even it's a game or it's kind of like a virtual land or some other stuff. Everybody says that it's like a metaverse. Yeah. So I would say in the future, it will be kind of like 1,000 or 10,000 of different parallel metaverses or parallel universe or parallel metaverses, right? So basically you can like be very easy to own your own, you know, metaverse. And I would say that the definition of metaverse right now will be quite different from what we see it in, let's say, 3 to 5 years. So basically right now, I think everybody is still trying to find what is metaverse. And I don't say that a thing that has a virtual land, have your own figure, your own avatar onto that, you have like your different things in the virtual world, it's called a metaverse. I don't say it's a metaverse. So it's more kind of like a definition that has broader, border of the definition. So I would say right now I'm not so clear about how the metaverse is going to be like in 5 years' time. Yeah.
Yeah. My fear is that Facebook is gonna dominate the term sooner or later.
I have doubt in that. You know that I'm a strong Web 3.0 believer and like strong believer in decentralization. So I think basically it will be a little bit hard for Facebook to actually become very decentralized by itself, right? So I would say in the future, maybe there will be two kinds of metaverse. One is a centralized metaverse, like Roblox, like Facebook, right? So it's a centralized universe. So everything is still the same. Like the big corporations own your data, the big corporations own your social network and everything. They even own all the assets of the virtual assets you have in a metaverse they build, right? And there will be a decentralized metaverse. I won't say that. Like my true belief is into the decentralized metaverses, not the centralized one. But I think maybe Facebook or Roblox gotta dominate the centralized, you know, industry of metaverse. But I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't want to live in a metaverse that is fully centralized and still controlled by government and corporations. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. That's the worst case scenario. But I just mean about the term, the actual word metaverse. I think they'll fight for it. I don't think they'll let us use it. I think the 5 years from now, we'll probably be talking about like decentralized web space or some new term will have to be invented just to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Let's invent a new world. Yeah. Let's invent a new world. Not like let's give the metaverse world the definition to Facebook. It's okay. They can own it, and we will discover a new one. Yeah,
for sure. So you've mentioned you had some incredible gains, and nobody likes to give predictions. But if I can ask you kindly for the benefit of our audience. What's your take on the market in 2022?
Oh yeah, it's a hard question. Actually, to be honest, I'm not so sure, and I'm a poor trader actually on the secondary market. I always lost some on the secondary market trading. So, because we're a long-term holder, right? But my prediction is that we'll see the market fix itself, maybe in next year. And right now, I think it's a little bit too heated. It's like the if you see from the meme coins, right? So, I think maybe the market itself is very, I would say, it can fix itself. Like nobody wants to actually control about the market, especially when you're in a decentralized world, right? So basically, I will see that a lot of rubbish coins will drop next year, or maybe drop to zero. I don't know. I'm not the investor of any rubbish coin, so like, I will not call it a rubbish coin. It's a meme coin, right? For example, all the Doge coin and Shiba, and then like most recently a coin called like what this Squid Game, right?
There's
So basically,
Flukey, there's so many now. There's so many
but
dog
I
based
was thinking,
meme coins,
yeah,
yeah.
it's only a short term thing. Like if the audience, like if you are an individual investor, you can just enjoy, like make it as a fun game, and you just throw some money that you are not so care of, and just play it. It's for fun. But if you are talking about serious investment, I suggest is you going out and find like what you believe in the future, what do you believe that has a real value behind it. So yeah, my prediction is that maybe I would say half of the coins right now that are very hot will vanish in the next year.
Got it. So I think we're headed for a correct. I mean, I'm hoping, unless you know, by this time next year, if this doesn't end, we'll have like a million different dog-based currencies. It's just it's
I don't want to
phenomenal.
see a world like that, right?
Not that I have anything against memes. I love them. I'm just saying, you know, we have to get back to like stuff that work, like developing new technology, not just the memes.
Yeah, but play it for fun. It's okay. You can throw like $2,000 and play for fun.
For sure. So, I wanted to ask you, what type of entrepreneurs are you interested to invest in? You know, who should contact you after hearing this?
Okay, so actually we have a theory. I don't know if I could translate it into English very clearly, but it's like in Chinese we call it the first draft, the second draft, and the third draft theory. So let me explain this. So the first draft means that the value proposition or what kind of value you want to deliver to the whole world, let's say the whole Web 3.0 world, or it can be huge, it can be small, it can be a specific like problem solving like solution, or it can be very huge, like you want to change some of the things right now happen that is not unfair, that is not correct, right? So basically, I think almost all the entrepreneurs, if you want to enter the crypto area, you need to have a first draft of your own understanding of the world, of your own understanding of how the crypto is going to change the world, right? So basically, the second draft is about technology. So basically, what kind of technology you're using, what kind of new technology you're thinking, you're inventing, and that kind of technology must serve your first draft. So it's not like fancy technologies almost always wins, right? So you can, if you trace the history of blockchain, you know, the ones who survived right now are not the best technology in the industry, but it's the best problem-solving technology, right? So basically, I would
And
say
best
your second
marketing
draft
too,
is,
for some reason.
it's about the technology. And the third draft is actually about marketing, is about operation, is about product itself, like how beautiful it will be designed and how user friendly it will be designed. So the third draft actually will serve your second draft. So basically, I think the entrepreneur should ask himself three questions. What are my attitude toward the world? what are my value actually I want to bring to the world? And the second one is like, in order to bring that kind of value, what kind of technology I'm going to use, or what kind of technology I would invent in the future, right? And the third draft is the third question is that, okay, so after I got the first one, I got the second one, so how should I promote? How should I do the marketing? How should I do the fundraising, the product design, the user interface design, and everything? So basically, we are looking at a great first draft entrepreneur. So basically, I think the entrepreneur who actually follow the logic, who knows what is going to happen in the future and knows about what is missing link in the future, so they can think one step further than everybody else. So we don't care so much about the product itself, or we don't care too much about the third draft. So we don't care if it's very easy to use, it's user-friendly. We don't care so much about marketing, about operation, and we don't even care about revenues or cash flows. So basically, I think all the things happens in the third draft can be adjusted or can be accelerated by the help of investors, your communities, and you know, bring on more talented people into the team. But the first draft, like your attitude toward the world or the value you're going to bring, is the original thinking that a entrepreneur should have. So we're focusing on the first draft, and will definitely help to accelerate or to you know create a better third draft for our portfolios. So basically, we're looking for talent who is good at the first draft. Yeah.
Gotcha. So let's say entrepreneur already got a draft ready, and now he's approaching you, you know, to raise funds. What advice would you give him? How should I approach a fund to raise to raise money from?
Okay, so first, I think the first recommendation is actually follow the logic. So the logic is very important. So we like the entrepreneur actually who has all the logic in his mind and think that, okay, this is the second step. And the second step actually is coming from the first step, right? And what I'm going to do in 2 months time, in 1 year time, in 2 year time, right? So basically that's one, follow the logic. And the second one is actually follow the heart. Don't need to change your ideas about what you're doing based on investors' opinions. So you better find somebody who understand you rather than you will understand them, like understand the investors and try to do things in a hot, let's say hot topic, right? For example, right now, a lot of teams approaching me says that they have a great GameFi project. And a lot of them are actually copycats, right? I don't say that we do not invest into GameFi. We do invest into GameFi, but we don't want, we want original, you know, innovations. Like, okay, why you want to do this thing? Like, follow your heart and do not change your ideas from the beginning. You don't need to do a thing because only because it's hot. It's easy to grab some money from investors. So do not do that. So we don't like projects with that kind of attitude. But try to thrill me and try to, you know, give me a kind of a shock with your first draft, like with your original thinking. So I would definitely invest into a project like that. Yeah.
Great. So if anybody out there trying to raise funds, try to be original and not just a copycat of, you know, another 10th, you know, I'm sure you get that 10 emails a day about the, you know, project that sound all the same, just with a different, different name.
Like, and different drawings, like different, you know, characters.
Yeah, just different skins on the same business model. Yeah. So, you know, I'm very interested about the VC situation, the crypto VC in China, in East Asia. How do you see the current landscape for crypto VC?
Yeah, so to be honest, that I see like two different trends happening right now. So first one is like talent people are actually entering this market. So everybody knows that like 3 years ago, for example, a well-trained financial like experts will not enter this market. Like it's a forgotten market, right? So people, when people talking about cryptocurrency, they all think, okay, it's not so legal, it's not so legit or things like this, right? So basically, right now we can see a lot of very talented, very well educated people, like young people, especially the young people entering the market, trying to become a VC or trying to work in a VC firm. That's one trend. But the other trend is that everybody knows about the regulation, right? So China is like most regulated place in the world to on the cryptocurrencies. So basically, a lot of, I would say, pressure on VC, not on VCs. VC is okay, but a lot of pressure on the entrepreneurs. And another thing is that,
does that extend into NFTs as well, or is that just
no? Coins? It's more kind of like the financial related. Mm-hmm. So more like regulation from the financial part, now the NFTs. And because I my wife is also like a crypto artist, and she's like the number right now, I think one of the most famous one crypto artists in China. Wow. And you know, all those, you know, big auction houses in China, like Poly and some other like the Poly itself is actually owned 100% owned by the government. So they will do at like a spring auction and autumn auction for my wife's work. So basically, I think the regulation towards NFTs, gaming, they're fine right now. But if you are doing kind of like finance related or mining related, it will be like under a little pressure like recently. Yeah. And another thing is that like I see some more old money is coming in. Like family offices, like internet giants. You know, I think the competition is going to be very hard. And but still, I would say too much noise in the market. So not so many patient investors around. So that's why we think that we are patient. So we want to be a more patient investor. So that's why our phase two fund is like 5-year fund. So we can actually invest in any projects that are not issuing any token for 5 years, or you wanted to actually build a product for 5 years, that's 100% perfectly okay for us. So we want to be more patient. We want to be more long-term. But in Asian market, like in, especially in Chinese market, I haven't seen too much, like too many VCs are like us, more VCs are focusing on the noises. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah. I think we've learned a lot about the Chinese VC market today and of course about 7X Ventures. So the last question for today, can you tell me or tell our audience where they can follow you and learn more about everything that you do?
Okay, so my Twitter account is at LostyRazor. So you can find me like directly through Twitter, or you can email me at lirongbin@7xvc.com.
Great. Yeah, we'll have both both links, the Twitter for anyone in crypto that's interested, and the email for any entrepreneurs out there looking for a VC in China. Okay.
Yeah. So,
Thank you again, Mr. Lee, your Razor.
Thanks so much.
Been great talking to you. And thank you all for listening to the episode.
Cool. Thanks so much, Avi, and thanks to blockchain.com and all the audience here today.